Ryan Smithy, we're certainly glad that you can be in with us. I know Chip just mentioned that Sean has joined us again in the chat box. Look forward to his input and presence there daily as an encouragement to us, as well as Jody. I guess she tunes in for Chip. I don't know. she joins us frequently, and hope to send out a hello also to our sister Kay this morning. We hope that she's been able to join us. Don't have a lot in the way of announcements this morning. I do want to continue to remind you of a gospel meeting that's coming up December 2nd through the 4th. December 2nd through the 4th, this is at the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ in Bossier City, Louisiana. And they are having Eric Lyons out. Eric works with Apologetics Press and has done quite a bit of work in the areas of apologetics, dealing with there the science and the proving of faith. And so they are having that meeting on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Do not be conformed is the theme. And so you can contact them if you would like more information. But December 2nd through 4th seems like a long way away. And that's this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right
and
here,
so,
man.
That is this Friday.
It's and December, man.
We are quickly approaching the end of the year. And not only that, we have been going through this study of the New Testament. And here we began back in the book of Matthew. And tomorrow we hit Jude. And Thursday, Lord willing, Chris is going to be starting the book of Revelation.
Wow.
And so we have found ourselves approaching the end, and we are certainly thankful that you've been a part of that study. And keep your ears tuned. We're looking for looking at a number of different ways that this whole series of studies are going to be made available, that you can go back and listen to sections that you want, or maybe go back through the whole year. And so we'll look forward to making that available as well. Might mention as well, while we are kind of more in announcements, I was thinking this morning of particularly three that we might send out as a generic prayer request. Certainly I urge you to keep on your minds those of Chattanooga, those families that are still hurting from that wreck that occurred with that school bus back before Thanksgiving. Mm. The events of Ohio yesterday with all that went on there, and then also the Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, Tennessee area, and the forest fires they're having there with the Smoky Mountains. You know, if we know we have a lot of brethren up there. I haven't heard anything specific with them, but I know that is always a worrisome time when many are being evacuated and not knowing what the condition of their homes and everything is. And so we certainly pray for all involved in that, especially our brethren that are up there. And so ask that you would do the same. But this morning, we'll find ourselves in 3 John. 3 John. And
which chapter?
Yeah. We'll start in the first chapter. See if we can't get through all the chapters today.
All right.
3 John, the last of these three shorter epistles. So 1 John itself is a good size bite, but 2nd and 3rd John here. I think 2nd John is the shortest in terms of verses in our English Bible. If I understand right, 3rd John is actually the shortest in the Greek text. I don't know if that's a word count or what exactly, but slightly shorter book here in the original language when we look at the book of 3rd John. And yet something Mike Vestal wrote a number of years ago in a commentary on that book, he said it is a reminder that dynamite often comes in small packages. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly true, that while this is a short book, it nevertheless is packed with some wonderful lessons on truth, of faithfulness, of contrast, really, is the word that comes to mind when I think about 3 John. There is a great contrast here between Gaius. Gaius, don't call in and correct us. I'm not sure exactly how all it will come out today, but between Gaius and then also Diotrephes, is going to be a direct contrast to that. And yet, then, even as you go through, in contrast to that, Demetrius. Mm-hmm. And so here's a contrast, really, between these brethren, but also very much a contrast that's shown even still among attitudes that are seen even within the church. And so certainly an encouragement for us to examine ourselves to see where we are at. And so we'll begin this morning with the greeting. And let's just start with the first four verses, and we'll come back and have a few things to say about those verses.
All right. First of all, we'll ask Chris and Jody, could y'all both sit down in the chat room? They're having a conversation on there. Okay, let's get going. Which ones are we reading?
Verse 1 through 4.
Chip needs to pay attention. All right. The elder unto the well-beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. For I rejoiced greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth.
All right. And so as we did yesterday, we look kind of at that introductory statement in verse 1, the elder. There's really no other place in which we find in the New Testament that anyone would have addressed themselves in such a manner if we're talking about the office of being an elder. I don't believe that is at all how John is addressing this book, but merely pointing out the fact, as we've mentioned, these letters likely written around the early 90s. John was advanced in age, and he is simply addressing them as the elder one, the aged, we might say here. And here, this aged one, this one who has experience, knowledge, wisdom, this still an inspired apostle that is writing this letter, ultimately of encouragement, one to strengthen their determination. The elder, the aged one, this apostle Paul that is writing unto Gaius the beloved, one here, I believe he is addressed as the beloved some four times at least within this book. Mm-hmm. One who is loved by him because of his stance for the truth, because of his love of the brethren. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to love someone that loves the brethren. Mm-hmm. That kind of person is easy to love in return. And I think we see that close relationship, that bond that they have here. And John returns it. I love you in the truth. There's a lot of that we could think about that statement as well, that John loves him as one who is united together in the same goal. There is one who John loves because, as well, the instructions to love one another that were found in the truth. And yet here he's writing one, and what an encouragement. Again, we've mentioned that in the letters of Paul. Wouldn't it be an encouragement to receive a letter and say, hey, I'm thinking about you. Mm-hmm. I love you. I appreciate your good work. Many have commented on this book. What a great pattern for us to strive after today. How many times have we sat down and written out a personal letter to someone just to say, I'm praying for you. I'm thinking about you. I appreciate the good work that you're doing. I appreciate the efforts that you put forth. I tell you what, one of our teachers Sunday morning had her students. They were talking about service. They were talking about Jesus washing the disciples' feet. She had those students write out, and it was a simple letter, but to men of the congregation, address them, and I thank you for your service in the church. And that's a great encouragement there to receive such a letter. I know, put Chip on the spot here, I've gotten letters from Chip, and that's a shot in the arm. I tell you, someone else, he doesn't think he's a good encourager, but one of our elders, Chris McAvoy, he'll send out a letter from time to time. Maybe it's on your birthday, maybe it's around a holiday, And that is a good shot in the arm. Not that you're seeking man's approval or his accolades, but what an encouragement it is to know that someone appreciates the good that you're doing, is thankful for it, and is encouraging you in that. And we see that within this letter as he is writing Gaius, and keep on what you're doing. Keep up this good work, even when there are others that might discourage you, even there when there are others that may be fighting against you. You keep up this good work. I love you for the work that you are doing. I love you as a brother. And he comes with that, not just that greeting, but he's going to turn around, and here he has a prayer. He has an urging, if you will. I pray that you may prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers.
Well, there's a standard.
Yes. And that's one I've got a whole sermon on that one verse there. So,
amen.
Wouldn't that be a wonderful thought for all of us? There are a few things, again, that we could learn. Number one, I'm going to suggest to you, John reminds us and shows us it's not wrong to pray for financial stability. It's not wrong to pray for good health. Those aren't the first things that we should think of. That shouldn't be our primary focus in this life. But it's not wrong to have those desires for ourselves or for one another. There's a question that's going to run through here. Has Gaius had some setbacks financially, health-wise, and John is praying that he can recover from those things? Or has he been doing just fine, and John is praying that he would continue in that? There is a sense here, as we read through here, maybe Gaius is one of those people that has been going above and beyond that which he is really able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be that he has been doing just fine, but he's shown us an example of one who has done good with that which he has. And I'm going to suggest to you, as you read through here, you see a man that John can pray for his physical and financial health, if you will, because he knows how he's going to use it. He knows he's going to use it for good. But notice here this qualifier. I pray that you prosper and be in health even as your soul prospers. That shows me priority. What is first? What is foremost? I pray that those things are in a good relation to your spiritual health, that you abound, that you prosper spiritually as we see in you. But as you would abound spiritually, as you would have this right mindset to use the physical and financial health, then I pray that you would abound in those things as well. And so here, again, a great encouragement to know he's praying for us. He's encouraging us. He's got us, as you will, in his best interest, praying that these things work out. Again, I would suggest this prayer is one of a right mindset, that the one who is abounding spiritually, whose soul is prospering, is the one that's going to have the right frame of mind, the right priorities to handle physical and financial health. That here he knows what he's going to do with it. He's going to seek first the kingdom of God, Matthew 6 and verse 33. He's not going to have that love of riches that's going to make him stumble, 1 Timothy chapter 6. But rather, he's going to have all of these things in a right mindset. And that's his encouragement. Mm. I hope that you prosper in those things. And indeed, verse 3 and 4 tells us that's exactly what he was doing. This is the report that we get, that your soul is prospering. Mm-hmm. Because when the brethren came, they bear witness unto your truth, even as you walk in the truth. And greater joy have I none than to hear that my children walk in the truth. What a report there that he comes back and he says, you know, people are talking about you. They're talking about the good that you're doing. Mm-hmm. The report that has come back is very good. And so I hope that you continue to abound in those things, that you would continue to walk in the truth. And notice how much over the course of these three epistles we've talked about truth. We've talked about walking, an active, obedient faith concerning the truth. We've talked about this idea of faithfulness. Well, Gaius, that's what you've been doing. That's what I pray that you would even continue to do. And then also think about John and his mindset. I have no greater joy. He addresses him here as the aged to the disciple. Mm-hmm. One possibly here who John considers one of his children in the faith, even as we see Paul writing. Maybe it's just that John considers himself at this point an aged man as a father or a grandfather to people, and he addresses them as my little children, maybe because he's had an influence on them, but maybe it's just that older fatherly figure. And so would encourage them, keep on walking in the truth, keep on keeping up the good work, if you will, and know that those things have brought great joy to me when I see those things happening. Mm-hmm. And indeed, it's a joy to me. I think it's a joy to any parent when they see their children doing that which is right. But it's a joy to me when I see brethren that are doing what's right. Even if I haven't had any necessarily direct influence over it, I love to see members of the congregation here doing a good work. I love to see North Jefferson doing a good work. I love to hear of the good work that's happening at in Singapore or other places. Maybe we know brethren around the world. We love to hear of those things, mm-hmm. and it brings us joy to know that our brethren continue to walk in the faith, in the truth, even as we're going to see in a minute when we know that there are some who no longer do. Mm-hmm. And so a great start to that book. Chip, I've taken both of our time. What would you add to that?
Well, I just appreciate the way I was just kind of glancing back and forward to the end of the letter necessarily. But isn't it interesting how he calls attention to others and never himself?
Mm-hmm.
Even I believe it was back around John 13 or so when we see him reference the disciple whom Jesus loved,
mm-hmm.
that lay on his breast here, the elder. Also in the second letter, the elder, never me, John, or I, John, mm-hmm. nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that. You know, Jude begins his letter that way. Nothing wrong with that. But it kind of suggests to me a humbleness of spirit, a humbleness of mind, and he's interested in others as obviously here, mm-hmm. well-beloved. He refers to him as beloved. I love in the truth. And so here's this agape love, this abounding love. So he's loving like the Father, because in the Father is agape. Loving in the truth, where this true love is found, the location of love. There's so many directions as you mm-hmm. could go here. The enormous comments that could be made from verse number 2, as you mentioned. And again, I don't know why it is particular with the way my brain works, but notice how he says at the end of verse 2, even as thy soul prospereth, it's that continual prospering. And so this is something that is continuing to go on. And mm-hmm. so he's proud to hear about that, even as a reflection into verse number 4, that these individuals are absolutely keeping on. You know, I see a glimmer. Even in Richard's eye from time to time when the name Jeff Whatley comes up, because Jeff was someone that was certainly helped, prodded, even worked with by Richard. That was a great point in Jeff's life. And so when we hear about the good works of Jeff, even where he works today, certainly there is a pride that swells within you because of the truth that they're still walking in, the good works that they're doing, and you know that the Lord is pleased. You know, others that we have come in contact with through the years. I know that Brother Chris talks about those that he's come in contact with in the years. He talks about young Jason Rollo,
mm-hmm.
You know, others that are doing so well. Talk about the older Brother Bakers, you know, that have helped him so much along the way. And so there's this relationship that we develop in the truth. And so I like the way that begins, in the truth, and interested in his well-being, certainly interested in his soul, and continuing to realize that your soul prospers when you're in the truth. And so there's a lot that can be connected there. I've got little lines all over my first chapter here, drawing truth and love and soul all together, even over into about verse 8 with fellow helpers. All this stuff kind of goes together. And so it's nice to see, again, like you said, the encouragement that John writes in this letter, just to pick up a pen and say, hey, I'm proud of you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
And like I said, there's many lessons, but one thing that we might overlook that I think would be a great encouragement to us all is follow his example in that. And maybe we've not been the ones to, you know, even if it's verbal, but I think it means so much more when you take the time to write something down.
Mm-hmm.
As much as it would pain me to do and much as it would strain someone else to have to try to read it, mm-hmm. I know even not just an email, not just a typed letter, but a handwritten letter there would mean much to many people and give them a great shot in the arm. So,
Sean injected a question here just a few minutes ago. He says, do you think that John was in exile at this point when he wrote this, because he seems to be able to write encouraging stuff all the time? And both Chris and myself responded and said, no, not at this particular time was he in exile. But certainly we appreciate those questions coming mm-hmm. in. And so Chris says, I was intrigued by your question. And so he did some digging, and so notice the benefit of this chat window is my
right.
point. All this going on, even behind the scenes, as you and I are talking here, there's an additional study going on even in the chat window.
Mm-hmm.
And so others are involved in that as well. Even Kay Hopkins is in on it. And so y'all get into the chat window and join that conversation as we go through this morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's press forward, and let's then look at verse 5 through 8. As we kind of see the rest of Paul's address directly to Gaius.
All right. Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers, which have borne witness of thy charity before the church, whom, if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well, because that for his name's sake they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such, that we might be fellow helpers to the truth.
All right. Few words that come to mind when I think about this address: hospitality, love, faithfulness. Another thought that comes to mind to tie those first four verses with these next four verses is Matthew 25. And we see it both here in that parable of the talents, verse 21 and also verse 23. But when the Lord would say unto his servant, well done, thou good and faithful servant, thou hast been faithful over a few things, I will make thee ruler over many things. And I don't want to stretch that out of its context, but I do believe there is a principle that we see from time to time in the New Testament of when you show yourself to be worthy over that which you are handling or a faithful steward, then you've shown that you can handle more.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to, I think, that prayer. John is saying, I can pray for your physical and your financial health because I know how you're going to use it. And how do I know that? Because I have seen how you have already used that which you have in your life, that which has been entrusted to you.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that here in verse 5 and 6. You do a faithful work in whatever you do. To them that are brethren and to strangers that are without. And they bear witness to your love before the church. And so again, we have this address, the beloved. And he talks again about his walking in the truth. But in particularly here, in this faithful work that he's doing, something he is diligent in, something that he has continued in, he is trustworthy. I see the idea here of John that he says, I know that if I sent somebody to you, they're going to be well taken care of. I know how you're going to handle them. It's one of those things, sometimes maybe we see this different times. I've asked questions before around town of people that have lived here. I said, I need an electrician. Who do you think I ought to talk to? And say, oh, call so-and-so. He's going to do a good job, and he's going to treat you right. We see it in the church. I'm going to visit in a particular area. You've got to go and worship with the congregation at fill in the blank. And they're a group of brethren that love the truth. They're going to receive you warmly and help you on your way. You know, we have those commendations. And that seems to be John's here. He says, I know you, and I know the good that you're going to do. Again, we would hopefully never do anything just for the praise of men. And yet it is a comfort to that he ought to know that he is so trusted. But it also is a comfort to John to know I don't have to have a reservation here. I don't have to give a disclaimer here that, well, Gaius will probably help you, but I hope you don't catch him on an off day. this is basically a broad statement of approval. I know that you do well, and it's not just me that says that. There are others that have reported this back as well, and so... What a great example of those Galatians 6 and verse 10, that idea that we ought to do well, do good unto those of the household of faith, and or unto all men, and especially they of the household of faith, as we have opportunity. Well, Gaius Gaius here seems like one of those that I can certainly pray, Lord, bless him, that he might continue in his work. Bless him with health and prosperity, because I know he's going to do good. He's going to use what you bless him with to a good end. He's going to show hospitality. And it was interesting to me. Here was a quote by William Barclay that talked about, especially of the Greek mind and of the mind of this time, and hospitality even in the world was expected. His claim here is that even the job of an innkeeper was looked down on, because here was one who is taking money for hospitality. Again, that's what's referenced of that time, but does it also strengthen our thought about the Christian ideal of hospitality here? If that was the mindset of the world, how much more should Christians show forth that love one to another, to help one another? And it had the idea here of providing a place for someone to be able to stay, somewhere to rest, providing for their food, for their necessities, whether it's food, whether it's that place to rest, whether it's, giving them help on their journey. And all of those things, we are going to see to their needs. And hospitality is something that is enjoined on all Christians, but you see it especially the requirements, the qualifications of an elder. Has he shown forth that hospitality as a Christian ought to? That Christian widow that wanted to be supported or needed to be supported by the church, has she shown forth that hospitality? What are they going to do once they're given that position, or is in the role of that widow, as she's helped by the church, is she going to help others? Are they going to continue in this? And so he had shown hospitality to brethren, even those that he didn't know, those that were strangers to him. And he is certainly encouraged in what he has done in the past, But notice how that transfers the end of verse 6 on down through verse 8. Because of what you've done in the past, I have full confidence in what you are going to do in the future. I want you to continue helping the brethren, setting them forward on their journey. Here especially those who have set forth for the sake of the name. I doubt there's little question in anyone that is familiar with the New Testament who the name is there. Mm-hmm. Those that have set forth in the name of Jesus Christ, those that have gone forth with his authority, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Go forth with his authority. Well, those that have done so, will you help? I encourage you to receive them, show them great hospitality. When it's time for them to leave, you provide for them the things that they need. Mm-hmm. They're going to need food. They may need some money. Maybe they need their clothes washed while they're there. Whatever it is that they need, help them in that so that they can go on in their journey proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ even unto the lost. As they take forth the gospel to the Gentiles, they don't want to appear as just out there preaching for money, so they're not now having to ask for support of those to whom they're preaching to. Mm-hmm. Let the brethren support them. Encourage them in that. Mm-hmm. And so you have shown yourself to do this. You continue to do this now is the encouragement and the regard. We, therefore, ought to help such that we may be fellow workers for the truth. Notice there, I think, a significant shift in verse 8. This is what I pray that you do. This is what I pray that you will accomplish. But verse 8, this is what we ought to do. John includes himself in this. Mm-hmm. We ought to be supporters of the truth. And when I support those who are going forth, I am a fellow worker, a fellow laborer with them in the truth. Just as you see that encouragement in 2 John 9, excuse me, 2 John 10 through 11, don't support those who are not preaching the gospel of Christ because you don't want to be a partaker of his evil deeds. But guess what? 3 John 7 and 8 do support those who are laboring in the gospel. Mm-hmm. Those who are faithful, we ought to be encouraging them. We ought to be sending them forth. We ought to be supporting them in any way that we can. Mm-hmm. And so you've shown yourself faithful in this, but yet still there's an encouragement. I want you to keep on doing this. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, we'll get to this in just a moment, but we're about to bring in Diotrephes to this equation. I'm not sure that encouragement isn't written to him, no matter what others do and say. Mm-hmm. No matter if others seem to be trying to shut down that good work, you keep on doing it. Mm-hmm. It's Paul's usage of it, I believe, in 2 Thessalonians 3, where he talks about be not weary of well-doing. In that context, he uses that twice, but in that particular context, he uses it in the sense of when others are not being faithful, when others are not doing that which they ought to be doing, nevertheless, you keep on doing what you ought to be doing. And Chip, maybe you have some things to add there, and I'll come back with that exact reference here in just a moment.
But. Well, I just I was looking at this idea of being brought along by others, mm-hmm. being helped by others, if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well. And so here's the idea of, where the funds come from, this staying above reproach, maybe, mm-hmm. even to think of that. And I thought, I was looking for it. I don't know if this is the reference that I had in my mind, but over in 2 Corinthians 11, it is the case that Paul mentions even the Macedonians, mm-hmm. who would bring him along. He says in verse number 8 of that passage, I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to mm-hmm. do you service. And when I was present with you and wanted, I was chargeable to no man for that which was lacking to me. The brethren which came from Macedonia supplied. And so here he says, I don't want to be a burden to you. And you know, here's this idea of bringing others on their way. And I think, and I can't remember where I read this at one time, but this idea of bringing one on their way, you know, grandma and grandpa, they used to walk us out to the car, you know, and they would stand there and wave until you were completely out of sight, you know. And here's this idea of actually going some of the distance with the individual, you know, bringing them on their way. Grandma would always pack sandwiches and all kinds of goodie bags so that we would lack nothing on our way, you know. And here's that idea of helping others on their way, being interested in another person's good and well-being. And even as you and Brother Chris in the chat window both mentioned, Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, doing it to all, especially those of the household of faith. And so here, you know, his work in the truth, his walking in the truth, his loving others is reflected in how we relate to others. And even, as you mentioned, in the judgment scene, you know, from the end of Matthew, this idea of relating to others, you know, part of our judgment is, you know, did you feed them? Did you visit them? Did you clothe them? Did you treat them the way that God wants you to treat them? And there it is, after a godly sort. There is a way that God expects us to treat one another. And so much of those things revolve around what you've already mentioned, but there is a way that we should act, and we do it in the authority, verse number 7, of Jesus Christ, who is head over all things to the church, as we read in the beginning of the Ephesians letter. So there is authority to do these things, and there is certainly a motivation, and that is the love of Christ, and certainly to be fellow helpers. Verse number 8, that is soldiers, shoulder to shoulder, wearing that yoke that Christ asks us to put on in Matthew 11. All of those things are wonderful. And so, as you mentioned, he makes this change and starts talking about this one Diotrephes who is not doing these things. Mm-hmm. And so Gaius is a wonderful example, and he transitions, like you said, into now, let's all do that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's all act that way.
And you know, it's one of those times when you think, well, this is a short letter, but how you wish it could just be ended right there with the verse 8.
Right.
That would be a great letter. But unfortunately, it doesn't. Reference I made was 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 13, you brethren, be not weary in well-doing. And it's right set in that section of there are going to be some that you need to withdraw from. There are going to be those who will not walk according to even the word of this epistle. But brethren, you do what's right.
Mm-hmm.
Guess you do what's right regardless of what others are doing about you. And that seems especially significant when we go ahead and grab here verse 9 and 10, and we see that transition.
I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbidden them that would, and casted them out of the church.
Mm-hmm. So here's one again. What a great example we have to begin with. But then here, one who has spoiled that. And, you know, what's in a name? Well, I know my kid will never be named Diotrephes. That's not a name I'm going to pick. He has spoiled that name that could have been otherwise good. And yet here we see a man, John says he has written unto the church. There's some letter here we have no record of, but he had tried to write unto the church. Who knows? Maybe Diotrephes destroyed the letter. There certainly seems to be a working here that he has done against the good that John was trying to accomplish, against the good that the church was trying to accomplish. And he has put a shame somewhat on the church there, but most especially on himself in the way that he has conducted himself, in the way that he has gone about these things. And so I had written unto the church, but Diotrephes, he got in the way. Why? Because he loves to have the preeminence. He loves to be first. He wants to be that one who, if you will, is most important. That one who is going to be the man, the decision leader. We don't know particularly here. Is he an elder that is trying to promote himself as maybe even the idea of a bishop that he wants to be over that congregation as a single individual? Was this just an area where Diotrephes, maybe there were not elders, and he was trying to put himself forth as first, as the one who would have this preeminence? He wanted to be the boss. He wanted to take that leadership role upon him, and he was, as it were, flexing his muscles to accomplish this. We're not exactly sure of all those details, but Diotrephes, who loved to have that preeminence, received us not. And this isn't just everyone. This is even an inspired apostle that he is rejecting, that he would not receive even this letter, a letter of encouragement to do the good, even that Gaius is doing. And he refused to do that. And so I will remember his deeds. There will be an accounting for the things that he has done for this prating against us with malicious words. So he is speaking against John. He is speaking against these good brethren that are trying to do the Lord's work. And he's not just content with speaking against good brethren. He doesn't even receive the brethren. He forbids those who would receive the brethren and would cast them out of the church.
Where did he get that authority?
Yeah, I was about to say, one thought that immediately comes to mind is it's not his, it's not man's to add or remove one from the church. I would hesitate here because I don't want to suggest that we see here the seeds of even what would develop into Catholicism, but you see within this man the attitude that's going to lead there. One man who wanted to be over another group of people, one man who sought even the power to control people by that power that he had, using whatever influence he had to say, if you do this, I'm going to set you outside of the church. Well, you don't have that power. You don't have that authority. Now, he might exclude someone from their assemblies, but it's the Lord that adds to the church. It's the Lord that takes away. And so it certainly was not his position to give. And so here, in contrast to the one that has shown such hospitality, here we have the contrast of one who refuses to receive, speaks against good brethren, tries to destroy their good name, and tries to influence and push others around by the influence that he yields. And certainly he sets this forth as a rebuke. As a number one, don't be like him, but number two, you know that his deeds have been noted. There's going to be an answering for them if John gets to come, and even if he doesn't, we know he's going to have to answer to those things before the Lord. And so, again, there's that sad note within the whole of an otherwise fairly good letter so far, this one that had tried to set him forth as a dictator.
Chris put in here just a moment ago, he said, I wonder how Diotrephes was able to gain such prominence. Did they fail to administer discipline? Did they lack the knowledge to disprove him and thus fail to prove all things? It was a situation that should not have happened.
Amen to that. And again, I, knowing the mind of Chris, I'm sure those are somewhat understood to be questions of not something necessarily that we have an answer to here in the text, but there's certainly things you wonder about. How did we get there? And it's another reminder to be cautious. Don't let things get out of control. Don't let the seed of sin, if you will, the leaven of sin spread. Think there of 1 John 5, the little leaven. Leaven's a whole lump. So how that came about, whether the church allowed it, whether it was in their ignorance, I don't know. But it certainly was a failure there somewhere along the line that even allowed this man to gain such prominence and such control over the church.
I wonder if it was that same seed that you see Paul mentioned back in the beginning of his Corinthian letter. He says, "Now I say that every one of you says, I'm of Paul, or I'm of Apollos, I'm of Cephas, or I'm of Christ." That seems to me to be some sort of a sectarian spirit in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And here these people may have very well had the attitude, I am of, you know, Diotrephes. Mm-hmm. He's our leader. And, you know, that's a scary thing. Maybe if you've had the opportunity to serve under one of these alpha males, as mm-hmm. it were, I make the decisions. Nothing goes through without my approval. Just come see me. Don't worry about the others. This type mm-hmm. of an attitude. That's a scary attitude to have mm-hmm. because here's one that, you know, unwittingly or, you know, certainly maybe even the opposite, you know, meaningfully puts himself at the head of the line
mm-hmm.
As opposed to standing in the shadow of the cross. And so here's a scary thing to see in Diotrephes, mm-hmm. and heaven forbid that it ever appears in any of us.
Right. And if I say there's the dual lesson for us, don't be like that and stand against such. John is, if there's any question of that, we'll get there in 2 seconds here, but verse 11, follow that, not that which is evil.
Mm-hmm.
he's just identified for us exactly what Diotrephes is. He is evil. His works are evil. He is not doing the work of the Lord. He is not being supportive of good works and good brethren, and such is evil. Mm-hmm. And so we even have, again, that divine commentary on his actions.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a reminder to us, you know, such a world we live in that everybody says, oh, you can't judge against his actions. You can't speak anything bad against another. Well, John did, and again, by inspiration, identified his works.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about, he's not trying to assign motive to his heart or anything such as that. Is it, look at what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that his works are evil. And fortunately, again, book of contrast, we don't end there. Well, I would have loved to end on verse 8. I certainly wouldn't want to end on verse 10. And so let's grab verse 11 and 12 and see another good example.
Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. Demetrius hath good report of all men, and of the truth itself. Yea, and we also bear record, and ye know that our record is true.
Okay, and so while we show this condemnation against one, we also show another commendation towards another. This warning, don't follow that which is evil. Don't get caught up in thinking, well, I'm going to follow Diotrephes. He seems to be the one that's in control. No. If he's following after that which is evil, do not follow in his same ways. Rather, follow in that which is good. He that doeth good is of God. And again, I'm going to remind us, John has shown us time and again, we can know that which is true.
Mm-hmm.
We can identify that which is true. We can and should follow in that which is true.
Mm-hmm.
Faith is to be active and obedient. And so here, when he talks about he that doeth good, he that's going to put this into action, he is of God. But he that doeth evil has not seen God. Well, none of us, in one sense, have seen God, but here is a direct understanding here that he has not, if you will, maybe the idea of experienced. He does not have that knowledge of God. He is not acting like God. We can see all of those things wrapped up within him. This one that hath not seen God. There's not that experience of knowing God. There's not that wisdom in his life. Otherwise, he would want to do that which is good. Looking up here, even in the original, that he has not seen God. Properly, it's Strong's would say to stare at, to discern clearly. He has not discerned God, and so is not following after God. Certainly, again, encouragement to us.
Reminds me of John 14:9, not to jump ahead of you or anything. He says, Jesus said, he that has seen me has seen the Father. And certainly here the one writing,
right?
You know, had seen.
And so Demetrius, then verse 12, he has a good report. Diotrephes has a wicked report. Demetrius has a good report. Diotrephes is trying to control. Demetrius has done good even in the face of those who maybe even would try to cast him out of the church. Maybe, I don't know, but maybe Diotrephes has even been speaking evil against Demetrius.
Could have been.
For the good work he's done. Again, I don't know that, but it seems that it could be natural that John is saying, wait a minute. Don't take Diotrephes' word for this. He really has done good. And if you're going to stand before a congregation with a letter from the Apostle John and say, look, Diotrephes has taken too much on himself. Demetrius really has done good. And here, again, this report, he has a good report of all and even of the truth itself. Oh, would that we would, that same could be said of us. Yep. That the truth speaks well of us, that when you compare our lives to the Word of God, you see one who is striving to walk therein. We also, John and those with him, also bear record, and you know that our record is true. We're not just trying to puff someone up. We're saying that which is right. We're saying that which is good. And so don't follow that which is evil. Rather follow that which is good, as this example of Demetrius, who has a good name by the things that he has done. And so he had gone about seeking to do good.
You might remember also, Paul writes to young Timothy and tells him that one of the qualifications for an overseer is that he must have a good report from without. And certainly those other ones might very well, as he points out here, fall into the reproach and the snare of the devil. Notice that it appears to me that Diotrephes had fallen into that snare. Demetrius, on the other hand, was one that was rejecting that snare, that was walking in the light as he is in the light. He was walking, even, you know, we say we would try to live by those standards, though we may never be an elder or deacon. And here's Demetrius, who is living to that standard.
And so an encouragement to them that will read, who do you want to be like? Who are you going to imitate? Certainly be more like Demetrius. Much more I would love to be able to say there. We better go ahead and close with verse 13 and 14 and wrap this chapter up.
I had many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen write unto thee, but I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we shall speak face to face. Peace be to thee. Our friends salute thee. Greet the friends by name.
And so here, you know, just a closing again of love and compassion. Many things I would love to write, but I don't want to do that here in this format. I'd rather see you face to face. Again, probably an encouragement to us, a reminder that this likely is earlier in the 80-90s, while John was believed to be around the area of Ephesus, probably still had some ability to travel there, is hoping to come and to see them even shortly, and would long to be able to speak face-to-face. But here's this letter. We send our peace. As you walk with God, we have the peace of God, and so certainly encouragement to continue walking with him. Our friends here are saluting you. Will you also greet those that we know? Greet them by name. Show our love, our compassion toward them as well. And so two men, Gaius, Demetrius, that have done a good work, I want to encourage you in that. I want to keep building you up in that. Diotrephes, if he would read this, if he would look at it, hopefully be pricked to the heart, desire to change his ways, but if nothing else, hopefully help destroy that influence, that hold that he had over this area, and hopefully destroy it, that good work could once again go on there. Don't know what comes of it, but we can certainly hope and desire that he wants to do that which is right and would change his ways. And again, excellent book that is written here for our learning, that we can hopefully follow in that good that we see of those examples.
And so as we have the opportunity to go off air today, we would even end the way that John is ending. Peace be to all of you that were even in the chat window today. Mm. We appreciate Sean and appreciate Chris and Miss Kay, Miss Ann and Jody, all of those that have been in the window offering up reminders and thoughts, Miss Kay chiming in as well. The danger of esteeming a preacher so much mm-hmm. that a person can't see their errors, like mm-hmm. Rubel Shelley, Max Lucado, and others that she has mentioned here before. So appreciate all of y'all, and peace be to you.
Excellent, excellent ideas. And Chip, we made it. We got through every chapter of this book. And so we do thank you for joining us. Be back, Lord willing, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as Chip and Richard tackle the book of Jude, and a lot of great thoughts there. I'm sure they'll have some fire under their feet tomorrow. Yeah. And as we mentioned, make sure and join in the introduction in chapter 1 of the book of Revelation with our own Brother Chris on Thursday morning. And so we're going to part ways for today, and hope that you have a wonderful day.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.